Crazy Scotsman living up a mountain, drinking like a fountain, we pausing for a breath. Breton girls are well hard, louder than a bombard, planted in the backyard, they don't last the best. What about the Polish? They were rather ghoulish when the party finished, were howling at the moon. Met a crazy Spaniard who got really hammered, fell on me then clambered back onto his feet. So many faces I have seen, so many places not yet been, so many people I have met, so many names not to forget, such beautiful people in their right, laughing, dancing through the night, so many faces I have seen, the future's so bright, it can't be seen.
Hello, and you're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. We don't have our jingle this week, so we thought we'd play a summery tune instead, given that we've just had the first May bank holiday and rain was reasonably absent. That was a tune by Three Daft Monkeys called Faces.
Coming up on the show, we've got Manu to read the cycling weather, and we're also very lucky to have John Campbell here to sing for us. But first, we're going to have some news stories.
Saturday saw the European Alternatives Resistance sound system parade protest in Strasbourg. The demonstration was held to protest the violent and brutal attack by Czechoslovakian riot police against the techno festival last summer. The protest was also against the repression in general of free parties, festivals and squats across Europe. Around 3,000 people gathered for the parade from all over Europe, together with sound system trucks, and despite the spitting rain, they seemed to have a jolly good day. Banners carried slogans such as "Nothing stops people who dance," "Leave us alone," "Respect our rights," "United against police brutality," "Freedom of movement," and "Free party, free people." Ben, who was one of the organisers of the protest, said, "We chose Strasbourg because the city accommodates several European institutions, in particular the European Court of Human Rights," to which the campaigners were delivering a petition and letter after the demonstration. Meanwhile, back here in the UK, the bank holiday weekend that's just gone saw two major free parties, one in South Wales and the other one near Peterborough. It's worth saying that the free party scene in the UK has been increasingly under attack since last year, when the authorities switched tactics and started using the fairly recently amended Public Entertainment Licence, or PEL, legislation against parties. It used to be that the police had a hard job to prove who was an organiser of any given party, but thanks to the changes, almost anyone who brings or drives PA speakers or electronic musical equipment, records or lights, or pretty much any infrastructure to the site of a party can now be classed as an organiser. The aggressive use of this amended PEL legislation last year saw an increased number of seizures of sound systems at parties, more arrests, and importantly, more prosecutions and pending prosecutions against members of sound system crews. Many have responded by keeping the information about their parties off the web, encouraging people not to publish photographs of their parties, and during the winter some have opted to hold members-only parties. The UK itself has a long history of the persecution of free festivals and parties, and of course this just seems to be the latest chapter. One commentator said, "This control freak state seems to increase its reach every week, clamping down further and further both on unlicensed fun and civil liberties. That said, week in, week out, free parties kick off all over the country." And just a footnote to that, while that item did say that two big free parties happened over the weekend, should be noted there were several others that were stopped by police action, arrests were made, and also maybe you saw in the news here in London, hundreds of police raiding the Fridge nightclub in Brixton over the weekend. Officers stormed the club from several doors just before midnight, swamping the venue and searching clubbers. Several people were arrested and many more cautioned in what the police no doubt ironically called Operation Atuna. Disgruntled clubbers complained that the police raid was over the top, saying that if the police wanted to target drug dealers, they could do that easily without using hundreds of officers to surround and search all the punters inside and kick them out of the club onto the street in the middle of the night.
Don't need another resolution to feel as though I'm going somewhere. We'll
Irish anarchists have clashed with police during the commemoration of the 1916 uprising last week at Easter. While the Irish state held its first military parade in over 36 years in remembrance of the 1916 insurrection against British rule, a group of 60 anarchists marched on a military base just outside of Dublin. The march consisted of a small critical mass and about 20, quote, weapons inspectors, quotes, with white overalls and hard hats. Attempts were made to push through police lines to enter the base, and a charge was made at the fence towards the back of the base. Throughout the day, policing was heavy-handed and brutal, with fists used instead of batons and army cadets charging the fence from inside to intimidate the crowd. Back in town, a military parade marked the 90th anniversary of the uprising, centred on the General Post Office. Activists handed out flyers specially printed for the day, with various current campaigns being used to illustrate how the Declaration of Independence is meaningless against the power of big business and the modern state. From Shell to Sea and Save Tara, they quoted, "We declare the right of the Irish people to the ownership of Ireland," "Residents against racism, cherishing all the children of the nation equally," and "Cosan Tories Socana's nothing to declare / CIA renditions through Shannon, we hereby proclaim the Irish Republic as a sovereign independent state," thus showing that the big business and government have made nonsense of the Irish Declaration of Independence. Bertie Ahern, "You're a hypocrite. Enact the proclamation." For more information, see www.indymedia.ie. And we're very lucky to have in the studio here today John Campbell, who I heard singing a couple of months ago at a social night, and it was a great pleasure to hear him. And he's here to give us a song about the glorification of terrorism, I believe.
Yes, this song, it's a Scottish song, and it was an early example of propaganda. Long before the printed media came around, news and ideas were spread through the use of songs. Robert Burns discovered this song. He didn't write it, but he discovered it and kept it popular. And basically, it's a treatise to the Jacobites, who were against the British state in the 1700s in Scotland. A Catholic movement to restore Bonnie Prince Charlie. The Jacobite refers to James, a Catholic king, against the Protestant monarchy. And this treatise is encouraging the Jacobites to disarm, put down the weapons, so a lot of parallels with later Irish nationalism and the upcome of the Jacobite movement was that tartan was banned and all of these things that glorified terrorism. So a very, very early example of state propaganda. And here we go. Ye Jacobites by name, landing here, landing here. Ye Jacobites by name, landing here. Ye Jacobites by name, your thoughts I do proclaim, your doctrines I mark and blame. Ye shall hear, ye shall hear, your doctrines I mark and blame, ye shall hear. What is right and what is wrong, by the law, by the law. What is right and what is wrong, by the law. What is right and what is wrong, a weak arm or a strong, a short arm or a long, for to draw, a weak arm or a long, for to draw. Ye Jacobites by name, landing here, landing here. Ye Jacobites by name, landing here. Ye Jacobites by name, your thoughts I do proclaim, your doctrines I mon blame. Ye shall hear, ye shall hear, your doctrines I mon blame, ye shall hear. What makes heroic strife famed afar, famed afar, famed afar? What makes heroic strife famed afar? What makes heroic strife of the assassin's knife. Or to hunt your parents' life with bloody war, with bloody war. To hunt your parents' life with bloody war. Ye Jacobites by name, land an ear, land an ear. Ye Jacobites by name, land an ear.
Excellent. The spring meeting of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund are upon us again in Washington this week. And though most people are affected by their projects and policies do not have the time or money to travel to DC, the Farragut Squares Collective have issued a call to action. The Farragut Squares Collective is a local ad hoc group of individuals fed up with the Bretton Woods institutions and capitalist globalization. They came together because Paul Wolfowitz, president since last year of the World Bank Group and previously architect of the war in Iraq, will be convening the biannual meetings of the World Bank and the IMF. So they note that he will be bringing together two tools of global exploitation, wars of military might with strangleholds of economic imperialism. The Farragut Squares Collective see the World Bank and the IMF as principal players in the economic devastation of the Global South through structural adjustment programs, currently referred to as poverty reduction strategy papers, and their meeting this town this week in downtown Washington, D.C., will see bankers schmooze with the private sector, laugh in the face of the world's poor, and continue to live off the fat of other people's land. Activists are promising to show that resistance is alive in our hearts, in our minds, and across the globe. Seeing our faces, or our masks, as the case may be, will be a requisite part of their weekend activities. We will be at their doorsteps, behind their limos, at their parties, and in their yard. From blockades to home demos, interruption to disruption, we'll be there following their every move. Organisers urging people to say no to capitalist globalisation and yes to the power of the people and the power of direct action. For more and coverage of the protests and actions this weekend, see DC Indie Media.
Meanwhile, the quieter approach to activism around the international financial institutions has also been bearing some fruit. The UK's largest ethical bank has announced that it won't touch the World Bank's private sector bonds. Paul Monaghan, who's head of the sustainable development at the Co-op Bank, has said recently, "We've looked at the investments of the World Bank's International Financial Corporation, the IFC, and concluded there is an unhealthy focus on fossil fuel technologies. Henceforth, we shall withhold investments until such time as renewable technologies are better supported." Now, leading development and environment NGOs, including Christian Aid and Friends of the Earth and so on, they've heard that the Co-op Bank had become increasingly concerned about the IFC's commitment to fossil fuel extraction and its failure to provide meaningful investment in renewable energy projects. Now, industry monitors estimate that in 2005, IFC was the world's largest multilateral financer of fossil fuel extraction. Meanwhile, the publicly backed development agency devoted a mere 4% of its total energy lending to renewables in the last year. Andrew Pendleton of Christian Aid added that poor people are on the front line of climate change, and yet the IFC continues to pump public money into fossil fuel projects on their doorstep. Not only is this immensely ironic, but these projects themselves are so often a source of misery to the poor communities living around them. For more information about this, you can check out www.brettonswoodproject.org. It's worth saying that one of the chaps from Bretton Woods said, "We hope this decision by the Co-op will lead other banks to look again at their holdings." But of course, the Co-op Bank itself isn't free from criticism. Last week's Schnews news sheet carried a very critical angle against the bank. You can check that out at schnews.org.uk. And of course, the other website that should be mentioned if we're talking about international financial institutions is ifiwatchnet.org.
Great. And now we... Thank you. And now we go over to Manu for the cycling weather.
Good afternoon, this is Manu. I have come all the way from France to read this weather report. It's true. I am told we're having 20 miles per hour winds heading west today. Pollution levels are flashing red in Neasden and Ealing, and it looks like we may have a shower later. So get your weatherproof ready. Okay, I have to go now because I have to catch my ferry back to Calais. Bye.
Thanks very much, Manu. And now we've got some audio coming up. Aidan Delgado is a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. He served in the US Army in Iraq from April 2003 to April 2004. At Abu Ghraib, he witnessed US soldiers abuse and kill Iraqi detainees. He spoke to an audience in Ann Arbor in the state of Michigan recently. Coming up now, this was downloaded from Black Box Radio, actually. Apologies for that technical hitch. We're going to cue up the audio again and try it again. This is Aidan Delgado from Iraq Veterans Against the War.
Well, we'll try and get that working in a little while. First, to some other stories. Despite two more SOCPA convictions in the last few weeks, the campaign against the Parliament No Protest Zone says it's going from strength to strength. And now they're talking about a Reclaim St George's Day parade due to take place this weekend. They're meeting at the Imperial War Museum on Sunday the 23rd at 1 p.m. for a party and picnic. They say they will then march to Parliament Square to stage a mock burning of the Magna Carta. Of course, that's the London Marathon Day, so I imagine things are going to be pretty busy in central London. But for more on that and the latest on the SOCPA campaigns, check out peopleincommon.org.
The government's set to propose two new amendments to a controversial bill giving ministers sweeping powers to change the law after Labour's chief whip in the Lords warned it would otherwise face defeat. Critics claimed the legislative and regulatory reform bill would allow the government to change almost any law it wished, even introducing new criminal offences punishable by up to 2 years in prison or altering the constitution without any debate in Parliament. For these reasons, the legislation has been dubbed the Abolishment of Parliament Act. It's had widespread condemnation, but inside Parliament, opposition has been lacklustre so far. It's due for its third reading early next week, and commentators will be watching the amendments closely.
Developers MDL are planning to turn a tranquil ex-quarry on the Cornish coast into a site for posh homes, a hotel and a marina. Locals say that they're not looking forward to the extra traffic and the road building in an already congested Cornish village. In fact, they want to turn the quarry into a wildlife park and study centre, and they've recently been accusing the council of being corrupt and not listening to the wishes of the local community. They've set up a local protest group, Stop the Marina, and have vowed to prevent further large-scale quarrying activities at Penalty Quarry after the submission of an application by NDL Developments to Cornwall County Council to extract 450,000 tonnes of armstone block from the quarry, and the stone would need to be extracted before the proposed development could go ahead. They're starting to hold protests there and collecting signatures. For more on that, you can check out their local campaign website, which is stopthemarina.co.uk.
Well, what a shame that the Abu Ghraib testimony didn't work out technically. That was very interesting, and I was going to play this track at the end of it, but we'll just have the track instead, which stands on its own, I think you'll agree.
You'll see. They think I'm off my crust as I creep about the gaff, but I'm really getting ready to surprise them all, because I'm busy sorting out the problems of the world. And when I reveal all, won't they get a crinkly mouth? I've given my all to the task at hand unstintingly, and when it's all over, I'll rest on my laurels. Here for a moment is a glimpse of my plan. All the kids will be happy learning things. The wind will smell of wild flowers. Nobody will whack each other about with nasty things. All the room in the world. They take me for a mug because I smile. They think I'm too out of tune to mind being patronised. All in all, it's been another phase in my chosen career. And when my secrets are out, they'll bite their silly tongues. All I want for my birthday is another birthday. When skies are blue, we all feel the benefit. Glimpse number two for the listener. Everyone will feel useful in lovely ways. Trees will be firmly rooted in town and country. Illness and despair will be dispensed with. All the room in the world. Ask me if I've had the voices yet. They don't think I know any true answers. It's true that I haven't quite finished yet. When it all comes out in the wash, they'll eat their words. I've got all their names and addresses. Later on, I'll write them each a thank you letter. Before I stop, here's a last glimpse into the general future. Home rule will exist in each home forever. Every living thing will be another friend. This wonderful state of affairs will last for always. This has been got out by a friend.
Yes, Aidan Delgado was a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War, and we've got some audio testimony from him now. Technical hitch. I'm afraid we're still having problems with that, so I'm going to read another story. Following on, another recent Greenpeace action saw activists boarding a ship which they say had been illegally fishing. Greenpeace and the Environmental Justice Foundation tailed the Binar 4 vessel for 6 days as it sailed from West Africa to dump its pirate catch on the European market at Las Palmas. As the Binar 4 waited to enter port, it was branded with the words "stolen fish" painted in giant lettering 5 times across both sides of its hull. More than 11,000 boxes of fish were on board the Binar 4, taken from the west coast of Africa, one of the poorest regions in the world. The authorities in Las Palmas have refused to authorise the offloadings of the illegal catch. Helene Boers of the Environmental Justice Foundation said, "We are encouraged to see that Spain and Guinea have taken action against this vessel, and we hope that this is the beginning of a more effective cooperation to improve control of pirate fishing vessels attempting to enter Las Palmas."
And that story was actually following on from another Greenpeace-related action that happened on the 13th of April when 100 anti-GM activists occupied the seed factory of Monsanto in Trèbes in France, shutting it down for the day and carrying out a citizens' inspection looking for genetically modified maize seeds. There was a massive police presence as activists from Greenpeace and also the Confédération Paysanne demanded that Monsanto and the French authorities stop importing and distributing genetically engineered maize seed. famous campaigner Joseph Bové said, "We are here to demand that the French authorities ban genetic seed, and in the interim, corporate conglomerates Monsanto must stop hiding where these environmentally destructive maize seeds are being sown. Farmers and consumers have the right to know where genetically engineered seeds are entering our agriculture and our food chain so they can protect themselves." This GE-free citizens inspection unit consisted of around 100 conventional and organic farmers, members of the public and GM activists from across Europe. The action was also intended to highlight a new genetics law currently being discussed in the French Parliament. The new law, if passed, would allow massive genetic contamination of both organic and conventional maize. "We are putting Monsanto on notice, along with each and every biotech firm that is contaminating our fields and our food supply now." This is what Oliver Keller, the National Secretary of the Confédération Paysanne, said. "Resistance against GE in our fields and food has been growing globally since its release onto the market nearly 10 years ago. In Europe alone, 172 regions have declared themselves GE-free, and around the world, many other governments, farmers and citizens are still uniting to keep their countries GE-free," concluded Gert Rietzheimer from Greenpeace.
And now I think we really are going to get this audio from the US soldier who turned conscientious objector after serving in Abu Ghraib prison.
"Hi, everybody. My name's Aiden Joshua Delgado. I'm 24 years old, and I'm a veteran of the Second Iraq War. Most of the guys in my unit had never left the United States. Certainly, they'd never been to the Middle East. So they lived in a state of complete culture shock all the time. And as a result, they were terrified of the Iraqis. You know, I never heard Iraqis referred to as Iraqis while I was there. It was always Haji this and Haji that. Haji is the current anti-Arabic, anti-Muslim slang being used today. It's very, very prevalent in the military. It's derived from an Arabic word, Haji, which means one who's been on the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, which is one of the pillars of Islam. But in English usage, in the soldiers' parlance, it has the exact same connotation as gook or Charlie or nigger, and that's exactly how it's used. And it becomes such a part of the atmosphere that had gotten into our paperwork and it become part of the bureaucracy. People don't really like to talk about racism in the military or poor behavior, you know, because that's our boys, you know, and it represents us. But the reality was a lot of guys did things there that I know they wouldn't have back home. In one instance, an Army Master Sergeant, one of the highest enlisted ranks, had been walking through Nasiriyah, and a crowd of children about that age surrounded him and started bothering him for food, water, candy, in the way that kids often do. And instead of replying to them, he reached into the back of the Humvee and picked up a detached steel Humvee antenna, which is one of those bars bent across the bottom of the screen. And he lashed these children with this steel bar in front of like a dozen of us. And honestly, nobody moved, you know, nobody reacted. We'd become so blasé at this point that it had become kind of the routine and the norm. The fact was that most of the guys in the unit had been stewing in anti-Arab, anti-Muslim sentiment since 2001. And these sentiments found expression in Iraq, first in the way they treated the corpses of people who had been killed, later in the way they handled civilians they came in contact with, and ultimately how they treated prisoners when they were under their thumb at Abu Ghraib prison. It wasn't like a U.S. prison. It wasn't like a cluster of buildings. It was almost like a city unto itself. It was several square kilometers on each side. And we housed about 4,000 to 6,000 prisoners inside who lived outside in barbed wire enclosures. The detainees were housed in canvas tents, about 60 to 70 prisoners per tent, set on a wooden floor with a pit or a slit trench for sanitation, hemmed in by barbed wire. The conditions inside the camp were very shocking to me. I'd always thought the U.S. Army was like the apex of professionalism